dead.
Hello and welcome to Craft Beer is Dead. I am Chris Face, and actually, strangely enough, this week I am writing solo. The pint-sized traveler, Bree herself, is currently attending to some family matters, and we wish her the best on all of that. But for today, I've been asked to try to do one solo, which might be super weird. And I am very excited to find out if that's going to be the case with all of you. So thank you for tuning in. This will be a quick, just kind of a short beer news kind of synopsis on a couple stories that I found that have developed over the last couple weeks since the last time we've done a beer news. And I'll have a beer myself and then probably wrap up with some beer-related creepypasta stuff, which, terrifyingly enough, is not difficult to find. There's a lot of brewery-related scary stories being written out there on the internet. I don't know why, but thank you out there, internet people, for doing that and allowing me to read that. So yeah, I guess we'll start off. I'll go ahead and just drink this whole beer myself, and Bree's going to miss out, and I feel so bad for you. Buddy Boy from Berry House, they were kind enough to come in and drop off some dope-ass lagers. If you are not familiar with them, they are a primarily lager-based brewery out of Tampa. They are, I mean, I think pretty much anyone who knows them, they can kind of agree that they're like the brewer's brewery, when it comes to any of the breweries down in Tampa. Nothing, no offense to any of the other ones down there, but you'll typically see a lot of industry people down there just kind of sipping on lagers, and that's pretty much all they do. This one specifically is Buddy Boy. It was a recent can drop from them. It is a Czech-style Pilsner in collaboration with Coppertail Brewing. If you haven't heard of them, then something's wrong with you. They are massive down here in Florida, and distribute, I'm pretty sure, out of the state as well. Great core brands, awesome, fun, kind of innovative slash more traditional stuff as well. Get your hands on their stuff. But Buddy Boy is traditionally Moravian floor malts are precisely boiled, along with a healthy dose of floral hops to create a bohemian flavor. This is a triple decocted beer, which, if you're not familiar with what that means, definitely look into it. It is a very fun traditional kind of way of doing mash styles. And if you're out there doing that, hats off to you. I wish I could do those more, but we just don't have the setup here. But they are super, super fun. So cheers to Berry House. Thank you so much for bringing these up. And I look forward to drinking this throughout reading some news stories. So right off the bat from Wisconsin State Journal, this is off of Madison.com, big story regarding everyone's favorite out of Wisconsin, New Glarus Brewing. Shareholders allege that New Glarus Brewing is denying them a taste of iconic beer makers' success. The majority owner of Wisconsin's iconic New Glarus Brewing is being sued by a group of longtime minority shareholders who accuse her of consolidating control over the business and funneling profits to side projects in ways that have kept them from reaping benefits of the brewery's success. Plaintiffs Steve Spear, Roger Runyon, and Karen Eichhoff allege that they've been paid only enough to cover taxes on their approximately 12% stake in New Glarus, known for its spotted cow and the only-in-Wisconsin approach to sales. Spear, Runyon, and Eichhoff's now-deceased husband, Dirk, were initial investors in the brewery when it began in 1993. Spear putting in $25,000 and Dirk Eichhoff putting up $12,500 into the $237,000 New Glarus president and CEO, Deb Carey, and she and her brewmaster husband raised to launch the business. It's not unusual for new companies to plow revenues back into operations, Paul Simer said, but the brewery is long past that point, with annual net income, according to the lawsuit, of about $15 million to $20 million and about $40 million in cash. Long story short, they're asking to be either paid out specifically on their shares, or to be at least start giving dividends, because right now all they're getting is just enough to pay the taxes on whatever it is they invested into. And after a few decades, that can be a very frustrating situation to be put into. Deb Carey says she was blindsided by the suit. "I've worked really hard," she said. "These guys have put in a few thousand dollars, and they've been made very, very wealthy." So I'd be very curious to see how that pans out in either or. He said, she said kind of thing. But if it's going to court, it's got to be some sort of issue. So with that being said, out of Wisconsin's favorite beer, we now have the world's most favorite beer, according to data. And this is from eatthisnotthat.com. You know what your favorite beer is, but how does it stack up against other beer drinkers' tastes? One company may have the answer, and they've compiled a list of the world's most searched beer brands on Google, and some of the winners might surprise you. Now, I feel like this one's going to be a little unskewed, or a little skewed in as far as Google searches go, and you can probably attest to that and maybe agree based off the fact that the first one is Corona. Now, if you're not familiar with what's been happening over the last 2 years in the on this little planet called Earth, that also shares the name with something that has been kind of ravaging the entire population of the Earth. So I think that might be a little skewed, but I will say that, you know, just the brand of Corona has been kind of hit pretty hard in regards to how coronavirus has been sweeping through the globe. Number two, Sapporo, which, you know, not surprising. It's always been kind of one of the top 10 sellers globally, as well as Modelo, Asahi, Kingfisher out of India was a big one that was kind of a... Didn't see that one coming. But you could almost kind of argue that these kind of correlate specifically to high population areas, things like Japan, China, India, Kingfisher being out of India. Heineken was a big one as well. They have their hands in a whole bunch of stuff, so it's not surprising. And then Budweiser coming in at number 10. Next up for stories, I wish we had a segue, but hey, I don't. I don't have a brief ace here, so I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to take a quick break on this sip profiles. That's delightful. God damn, they do good stuff. So one of the more disturbing stories that I found recently was from foodandwine.com. I feel like we've seen a lot of very interesting collaborations over the last few years. We've seen ranch beer. We've seen hot sauce beer. We've seen... just what we talked about a couple weeks ago with Mountain Dew and that like on that. According to this one, this beer was brewed to pair perfectly with mayonnaise. If you're anything like me, you think mayonnaise is the devil's condiment. It's disgusting. And if you disagree, just picture it being poured out of a jar and it glooping in all of its disgusting fatty glory. If you like it, it's okay to be wrong. According to Food and Wine, mayonnaise may be the most polarizing condiment on the continent, as we just attested to. Fans love to slather mayo on everything, from sandwiches to french fries. Haters can't decide which is worse, the taste or the texture. But both sides of the debate may take interest in a new product. A mayonnaise brand and a brewery have collaborated to create the ultimate beer for pairing with mayo, which is something, and this is my own thing, which is something that I don't think anyone fucking asked for, but it could be great or either elevating for mayonnaise experience and washing the sauce off your tongue. South Carolina-based Duke's Mayonnaise teamed up with Virginia's Champion Brewing Company to tackle a simple question. Can we create the perfect beer to pair with Duke's Mayonnaise, specifically a Duke's Slathered BLT? Any beer goes well with a BLT. Don't worry. No mayonnaise was harmed in the making of this beer, except maybe during the taste testing phase. I can't imagine having to fucking do this. So it is a, let's see here. Da, da, da. The results of a family recipe named after Duke's origins, a 5.1% ABV Vienna style lager made with Vienna malt, Magnum and Saaz hops for a bit of bitterness. So basically they made a Vienna lager. Cool. I don't know if that was made hand-tailored specifically for mayonnaise, but I can tell you they've been great throughout the century since they've been made. So good job with the creativity, guys. No offense at you, but you had BLT. You could have done some smoke malt, some something. I don't know, man. But at least you don't have to worry about having mayonnaise in it. So, you know, if you like Vienna lagers, at least you can just drink that by itself, and it'll be great. And you don't have to worry about eating mayonnaise. So you win. That's great. Speaking of weird beer that no one wants, beer shortages. Could be an issue with grain developers over in Texas. A lot of the wildfires, unfortunately, have caused a bit of a streamline issue when it comes to being able to produce locally made grain for a lot of Texas-based breweries, specifically over in Austin. Austin Beer Works spokesperson basically said that 87% or upwards of 80% could basically be completely ruined of a lot of their locally grown malt. Wildfires have also caused a lot of issues up in Washington. So I'd be curious to see if we're going to see any sort of small scale trickle effect for hop production, for hop availability. I'm sure a lot of the big guys with, you know, massive contracts, things like that, have nothing to worry about. For, you know, us little guys who do a lot of spot buying, that could be a bit of a concern. But, you know, luckily for little guys like us, we don't have a lot in the way of core brands. So we just kind of pivot, and whatever we don't have in contract, we just get a little more creative with. So challenge accepted. I'm sorry that's happening up towards that area. Obviously, that's a terrible, terrible thing for a lot of the farmers and the agriculturists out there. But at least us little guys have a little bit more wiggle room when it comes to being able to get some other fun stuff if we need to. Next story, Space Beer. Speaking of hops, hops are going to be flown on SpaceX's private astronaut mission Inspiration 4 and will be auctioned off for charity. This is from space.com. Billionaire Jared Esickman is looking for a brewery to make beer with space-flown hops and for a good cause. The tech entrepreneur and experienced pilot has chartered a SpaceX flight to send himself and three other passengers, all private citizens, into orbit for a three-day mission in a Crew Dragon spacecraft. Called Inspiration 4, the mission is scheduled to lift off September 15th from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida, riding to orbit on SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. Hitching a ride to space with the Inspiration 4 crew will be 70 pounds of hops, an ingredient that adds bitterness and aroma to beer, adoy. And when that hop returns to Earth, or those hops return to Earth, I should say, Isaacman plans to auction it off to a brewery and donate the funds to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. He announced on Twitter on August 12th, adding that interested breweries should only inquire on inspiration4.com. Isaacman has also donated two of the four seats of the Inspiration 4 mission to St. Jude, which is located in Memphis, Tennessee. One went to Haley, can't even pronounce that last name, won't try, a physician assistant of the hospital and childhood survivor of bone cancer. I will say that that's actually kind of a cool thing that they got going on. I don't know if we got the cash to be able to auction those on or bid that auction, but I mean, that'd be kind of fun to do space-flown hops. I doubt it would do anything different to any sort of oil content or anything like that, but what a hell of a branding opportunity, am I right? So, inspiration4.com, if you are a brewery out there interested in being a part of that, definitely hit them up on there and see what you can get done. Let's see. We've talked about beer and health before, whether it be mental health, physical health, those kind of things. According to KMBC.com, we have a new article stating that beer may be a better post-workout drink than we previously thought. So, had an awesome workout? Your team won or maybe lost a lacrosse game? Oh, go ahead and have a beer or two. Science is totally cool with it. It basically denotes that with the amount of sodium that's in there, with the amount of hydration that's in there, the mineral content, things like that, as long as you're like a sub 4 ABV beer and not having more than two of them, it actually does a pretty good job at hitting a lot of like sodium and carb components as far as what your body's looking for afterwards. You know, anything over 4%, you're typically losing a lot of those kind of benefits. So, I don't know, maybe that's why they suggest a Guinness to pregnant mothers and all that jazz. But after that, the alcohol's diuretic effect will take over and flush out even more fluid than you try to rehydrate with. And don't even think about alcohol pre-exercise. Quote, we would have a drink, or we would have to drink a ton of alcohol to meet the amount of carbohydrates needed for exercise, said Wine, one of the doctors they interviewed for this whole thing. At that point, you'd be in too much of a stupor to even work out. I'm not proud of this, but I have gone to the gym after a few beers, and I will contest that one time out of 10, it's amazing, and the other nine times, it's just awful. I haven't done it 10 times, but I can only assume, because like I've never had a good experience, and if you have, I don't know how you're living your life, but it's either a gift or a curse, and I can't tell. So, last thing in the beer news, I think we spoke about, in a few episodes ago, we talked about Germany's resale of beer that they had in a lot of Middle Eastern countries that did not allow for alcohol consumption. So, you know, they have like a two per, or I think it's two beer per day limit on a lot of soldiers overseas and stuff. So they'll constantly supply different types of beer. If you haven't heard, Afghanistan has been going through a bit of a change. And while we are not a political podcast, we will, I mean, it's kind of hard to not see what's going on over there. So with that being said, there's a lot of evacuations. There's a lot of, you know, staff, people, and a lot of civilians, too, being evacuated. And now, unfortunately for Germany, they are under fire. Angela Merkel is shamed after Germany's evacuation consisted of cans of beer and wine before people. This article basically states that they evacuated about 65,000 cans of beer and 340 bottles of wine before people in the Afghanistan evacuation amid the ensuing chaos. I'm no expert, and I won't go into political leanings on this, but what I will say is this. I mean, probably the people first, you know? Like, definitely do that. From what I understand, you have plenty of beer over in Germany, so maybe just, like, focus on getting people out of a hellish zone, whether you agree with it or not, you know? It's just shitty conditions. So, yeah, maybe they'll resell that like we talked about last time. Maybe they won't. Who knows? But that's their priorities. I don't know what to tell you on that one. That's just a very interesting story, and I'm curious to see what their defense is on that as that comes out. So, like I said earlier, this will be kind of a quicker episode. A couple different stories that I was able to read off while I'm waiting on our glycol chiller to chill down one of our tanks so I can get some stuff done. If you're out in a brewery, you totally understand the frustration of that if something ever happens to your tanks. So, yeah. Those are all the news stories, and I guess we'll finish out with... Okay, now, please keep in mind, these creepypasta things are meant to be kind of cheesy and hokey. So if you're listening to this and you think it's a dumb thing, well, I mean, that's kind of on you. I've already warned you, so I don't know what to tell you. So this was on Reddit's No Sleep, and it is from author Sherry Amour. About 3 years ago, she posted this up, and this was the brewery cat. This is the tale of the brewery cat that will be told after I drink a little bit of this beer. All right. Ooh, settling into some spooky music. Thank you, YouTube copyright-free spooky music beds. All right, the tale of the brewery cat. This one is on brewery's Reddit, No Sleep, and this is by Sherry Amour from 3 years ago. Brewery cat. I used to work at a small craft brewery, and after 3 years, was one of the longest standing employees. It was a good job, paid okay money, and was pretty uneventful, if not slightly boring. Well, it was until the brewery was shut down. It's for the best, really. The business was small, we only had about 6 beer tanks running at a time, less than 5 employees, and a dingy bar space that was really catered to locals. Because of this, money was often tight, and the owner, Mark, constantly struggled to stay in business. I've dealt with long delays in pay, we've had our utilities shut off from time to time, our phone service cut out. Money issues have also caused a lot of the contract work to go unpaid, and we've had to cut essential services down to make do with cheaper alternatives. The issues with the rodents began when the monthly exterminator stopped coming by, most likely due to Mark not paying the man. He never mentioned it, so I never asked. Of course, anyone who's worked in a brewery has experienced the horrible rodent problem that comes with it. Actually, no, real quick, no, but whatever. The grain attracts rats. They eat the precious ingredient as well as leave droppings and being just generally unsanitary. Sometimes they even pop up in the bar area, not something you'd want to see while out for a drink. The contract exterminator would originally come in once a month to lay traps, and fuck if I know what else, but nothing seemed to work anyways. I used to come into work each morning when the evidence of rodents would be everywhere, droppings all over the place, and bags of malt chewed through. Cleaning was a mess, and it became a daily routine. The rats were a constant, and while it wasn't my job description to clean up, couldn't get around it. Honestly, the exterminator wasn't great, but at least he kept the rats at bay. When the service stopped, the rats became more of an inconvenience. We laid our own traps, but they kept getting bolder, seemingly taunting us with their presence. Bigger messes were made, and when I found one dead in one of our full tanks, Mark had had enough. He had a cheaper solution to our rodent problem, the brewery cat that we would get. I went with Mark to adopt her, our brewery cat, and after an hour in the kennel, a few white lies about our motivation for adoption, we left with Spunky, a large gray tabby cat. Mark figured he could keep her at the brewery full time. He's a workaholic and basically there all the time anyways. So, we set up a nice space for her. A comfy bed, litter box, food and water bowls, and Spunky became our newest employee. Spunky never ended up being much of a mouser, though, much to Mark's disappointment. When we first got her, she was placed at every rodent sighting, but other than a blank stare, Spunky could care less. She got bored on the waiting, the chase, and the rodents in general. Her interests resided more with the feeding time, long naps, and belly rubs. Still, the rodents knew she was there, and her presence had enough of a desired effect. The rodents were still there, but we did notice a decrease in sightings and droppings, so Spunky stayed. Spunky was shy at first, hiding within many crevices and corners of the brewery, but as the employees' affection for her grew, she warmed up to us as well. For the first few days, she didn't make a single noise, and I thought she might be mute. Well, this wasn't the case. She can make a lot of noise when she wants to, or when feeding time. She's a relatively quiet cat. The last week I worked, I was put in charge of taking care of her. Mark was out of town for a vacation in Cuba, and God knows he needed it. During the week, her behavior began to worry me, though. While Spunky's normally a quiet gal, that week she couldn't stop crying at the door to the fridge, or the beer fridge. Breweries have large walk-in coolers to store beer. We keep our own bottled and keg beer in there, as well as empty kegs we receive back from customers. Our kegs are cleaned and reused. It's cheaper for both us and the consumers. To save energy and money, we keep our lights off in the keg room, as the electricity to keep it cool already hikes up our bills to a ridiculously unaffordable amount. The employees barely use it, unless we've got something, which, as I've said, is not as often as business is slow. I initially thought she was just curious, as the keg fridge is in a place she's not allowed to go, due to both the temperature of the room and the likelihood that someone will accidentally trap her in. Besides, no rats have ever been in there, nor ever seen in there, and it's not really an animal-friendly room. I figured she would just get tired or bored and eventually just leave it alone. Still, every day she would sit in front of the door, for hours at a time, watching and waiting. She would cry to be let in, loudly, much to my coworkers' dismay and annoyance. This lasted almost a full week before I could finally let her in, and while I was doing some bottling work, figured I'd just keep an eye on her. When I opened the door, she quickly darted in and disappeared into a row full of kegs. I fixed a stopper to the door to keep the door slightly ajar and returned to my work. Once in the fridge, she was silent again, a stark contrast to her earlier behavior, so I made sure to check up on her every once in a while. All day, she refused to come out of the room, silently sinking among the shelves and kegs, ignoring my attempts to coax her out. When she refused to come out for dinner, I finally had had enough and readied myself to pry her out of there, flashlight in hand. Our keg fridge is large, dark, a place that I would rather not spend too much time in, but nevertheless, I followed glowing eyes further among the shelves, flashlight focused on her, stalking silently behind the kegs. Near the back, I noticed an empty spot and figured I would grab her as she walked along it. When I saw her eyes reflect on the open shelf, I pounced, grabbing her up in one swift movement. She flailed, angry and screeching, scratching to escape me, and I lost my balance tumbling down, she leaped away. The whole ordeal knocked the flashlight out of my hands, and once I sat myself up, I began grasping around for it. However, while feeling around for it, I felt something else. Something fuzzy, something moving, something I thought was Spunky. I grabbed it and booked it out of the room, not wanting to be in the dark room for any more longer than I had to be. Once I was out of the room, I finally looked at the monster in my arms, the giant rat, as large as a cat, its beady eyes bulging out of its head, and belly round with horrible moving protrusions. The monstrous rodent gurgled, its body stretched seemingly constrained within its own skin, and I have to admit I screamed and dropped the ugly thing in shock. The monstrous rat scampered away, swaying as if it were drunk, grunting and gurgling as it did. I knew we needed an exterminator, pronto. Still, I needed to get Spunky out of that room, especially since there was more of whatever that thing was, and with a better grip on the flashlight, I went back in, and I was determined to come out with that sweet girl. As I once again approached in the back corner of the fridge, I could hear noises that the rat had made, except louder and more of them. Oh God, there were so many of those things, those rats. Something was wrong with them. They were too large, too focused, and too meticulous at their task. Beneath the swarming pile of bulging bodies, I saw a sight that will haunt me forever, and the reason why I quit my job, while I'll never work in a place with rodents again. Underneath the pile was Mark, his skin torn to shreds by feeding rats, his body decaying, eyes bulging. I kicked rodents few aside and threw up. There were smaller rats inside of him, babies moving around his torn stomach underneath his skin. The animals were feeding off of him, and obviously had been for a while. I got out of there as fast as I could, called the cops, and haven't been back since. But I've heard the stories from the other employees. Mark never left for vacation. He must have worked late alone one night before he was supposed to go. Mark also wasn't the only body found in the freezer. The cops also found the bones of the missing exterminator, picked clean. The death of the exterminator was concluded to be due to blunt force trauma. The guy had hit his head in the freezer and never left. The cause of death for Mark was never determined, but the cops never found anything more than average-sized rats by the time they got there. It seems the large, monstrous rodents were gone. I live in a small, clean apartment now, and an exterminator comes by every month. You can never be too careful or too cautious, because those things, those grotesque, disgusting things, they're still out there, and sometimes, in the dark, I swear I can see those beady, bulging eyes staring back at me. Ugh. Alright, well, that was gross as shit. Sorry it wasn't a more spooky or fun story, but that one's kind of, I don't know, you know, just keep out for rats. Keep a little thing going on. Maybe a little cat. I don't know. Or just have better hygiene, better process, all that stuff. So, if you do have rats, get them out of there before they eat you and your exterminator and your walk-in cooler. Yay! Alrighty, guys. First solo episode. I appreciate you being very patient and kind of hanging out with me on that, but hopefully there won't be too many more in the future. Again, best wishes to Pint-Sized and her kin. Thank you again for listening. If you are a new listener, please be sure to subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at craftbeeristdeadpod. You can also follow us on Facebook. We're starting up a TikTok tune, so that'll be fun. And then huge shout out to Berry House again for dropping off some dope beers there again down in Tampa. Lagers are amazing. And then if you haven't already, definitely check out Sticker Wolf. He's always kind enough to hook us up with a bunch of like slappers and cool branding stuff. So great work if you ever need labels, especially if you're at a brewery right now and you need some awesome labels. Very quick, great response time. We've yet to have an issue with them, and they kill it every single time. So definitely check out Sticker Wolf. Ryan over there will take care of you. Other than that, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week. Dead.